You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, June 28th, 2013. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. It's Casual Friday. What a crazy, crazy week. On the program today, Cliff Schechter, to look back at part of the week that was. He's on semi-vacation, giving us the movie picks of the day. Well, I guess it may be Mike and Matt. Michael and Matt.
Depressed when you say that.
Why do I sound so depressed? Because I'm not as excited about your movie picks, but we have so much to talk about today. So much to talk about today.
Under the bus.
Oh, not. It's a small, limited bus. It's an entertainment choice.
Your short bus that you come in.
It's the short bus that I've thrown you under.
You never watch any of them, anyways.
I do watch some of them, but as of late, of course, not as much time because I'm still dealing with the wake of the birth of a child. Folks, is wide and long. And so I am still dealing with that. On the program today, comprehensive immigration reform passes the Senate. That may be the last we hear of that bill. Also, those revelations about the CIA and their involvement with the New York Police Department. We still got to do an accounting of Obama's environmental speech earlier this week. More NSA revelations about Bert and Ernie in the wake of the DOMA decision from the Supreme Court. More shenanigans by Bank of America, whistleblowers blowing the whistle on that. And, it looks like John Corzine will actually be held to account. We will talk about that and reports on who leaked the information that the United States created Stuxnet. Turns out it was the guy who created Stuxnet. More on that as the show continues. We'll also be taking your phone calls early today at 646-257-3920. Early as far as a Friday goes. And I think we still have a Jimmy Reefer Cake song from weeks past. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll be talking to the one and only Cliff Schechter.
Exactly one. Every-
We are back, Sam Seder on the Majority Report. Ladies and gentlemen, what do you call a guy who is so in tune with what's going on politically, who is so passionate and so wise on such topics, that not only is he desperately needed, but he desperately needs to relieve himself of his... to relieve himself of all that pent-up reaction to the news of the week. Well, of course, you call that guy Cliff Schechter. But before you do, you play his theme song. Well-deserved.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC. New media, public relations, and strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC.
Cliff Schechter, now I have to imagine that your wife is incredibly tolerant of you. I know you're on vacation. I've seen the tweets.
See, you said, what do you call someone who desperately needs to relieve themselves? a vagrant would be one thing. A jackass. Someone who needs to get a life. You could call me a whole number of things.
No, not at all. I call you passionate, committed. So, Cliff, what an amazing week to go on vacation, buddy.
I know. I like to go away when there's nothing going on. To answer that question, we've been having a great vacation. I've been very busy with the kids, and my wife is a wonderfully accepting woman of when it comes to, and she happens to believe in this stuff too, so we're lucky that way.
Yes.
Taking a little time for the show here works, and this week was just insane, from Wendy Davis to the Supreme Court decisions. I think kind of the nation vote, I think there was a theme there, Sam, a theme of which we've talked about often, of newer rising demographics, if you look who's involved in some of these various issues. I think we could just simply call it the future versus the past. That's what we saw this week.
I would include in that as well the President Obama's energy speech. I mean, there's been mixed reactions to it, but and we're going to end up probably, I imagine, breaking it down more next week. But I'll talk about this later in the program. But there was, it seemed to me, a concerted effort to sort of, in some respects, bury the speech, which leads me to believe that it was really geared towards environmentalists more than the wider population, as it were. But
it still was an important speech.
Indeed,
important given by this president. What I would say is again, it's a shame because I think you're right. I think again, he's making a statement about where he stands, but he's not trying to persuade as much as because of when he gave it. I think you're right. It just, often, look at what we saw, and we're going to talk about this with Wendy Davis. Look at what we saw. And that's sort of the argument that I've made, and I think you've made too on the show for all the years I've been president, is that one person can make an enormous difference. They can electrify people. They can make people realize they're not alone. They can make people realize that we're on the right side of this. They can make people want to stand up and fight for something, and push that. And I just still think, with a few exceptions here and there, when President Obama's gotten angry, I'll give him credit, as I did in the past on guns, when it seemed he really got angry on an issue that I care about. But for the most part, he's never sort of seen his role and understood the importance of, you're not just, you don't just get up, say what you stand for, and then go and sit in the back room and make deals. You persuade people. You convince them that you're right. And big moments with big speeches and big stands can do that. And, we've got it going on the state I'm sitting in right now in Ohio. We had the same thing happen in 2010 here that happened in Pennsylvania and Michigan and Wisconsin and a lot of other swing states in the Midwest and other parts of the country, where a bunch of right-wing lunatics took over the state legislature. They elected a right-wing governor, and their poise was
You're breaking up a little bit. You there, Cliff?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Keep telling me. Keep telling me if you lose me.
Oh,
can you
of
hear
course.
Me this
yes, we can hear you. Well,
okay.
let's
we have the same thing going on here in Ohio, where they're poised to potentially sign, you know, the governor these crazy bills that will cut plan, you know, cut funding for Planned Parenthood, that will have it add an ultrasound, which is women, of course, enjoy to the menu of things that women have to go through to have reproductive choices. And you know, that we've got this going on here, and so hopefully what Wendy Davis did will help expand the playing field, so to speak, of where people are willing to stand up and fight.
So let's start with the Supreme Court decisions this week, and then head into talking about what happened in the Texas State Legislature, because and I want to start these are both monumental decisions. The Voting Rights Act, the gutting of the Voting Rights Act, and the death of the Defense of Marriage Act. And they're both monumental, and they obviously sort of head in different directions. One is incredibly regressive, and one is well overdue. In many respects, go ahead.
Well, the important first thing. Well, I'm going to say the important first thing to remember here is, you know, a lot of people say the Supreme Court, you know, was great on gay rights. The Supreme Court was terrible on voting rights. What we need to remember is that 8 people were on the same side of both of those things. So really, nothing changed except for one guy's vote.
Right.
You know. That 4 people were terrific, and were fantastic, and have been, you know, I would mostly say the 4 Supreme Court justices on the left side of center have been very good on most things, and they were once again on these 2 things, and the 4 regressive nuts, you know, were pretty much exactly where you'd expect them to be, and again, it proved why it's so important that we replace, you know, Kennedy and Scalia are getting up into their late 70s, and why we replace them with people who are progressive, because you can't count on Kennedy on gay rights and on abortion rights and other things. He's with you here and there, but, I mean, he's been terrible on a variety of other things, like voting rights, as he was. And then there's Scalia, and we can talk about his dissent and laugh at it a little bit overly, and the fact that he freaked out essentially the day after he determined what Congress couldn't do something anymore, and that it was a Supreme Court step.
We lost you a little bit as you went into Scalia. Sorry about this, folks. This is a small price to pay to have access to Cliff Schechter when he is remote. All right, we've got to take a quick break and give him a call back. Just bear with us, folks. Thank you. All right, so Cliff, you've now stationed yourself on the roof of the cottage, your vacation cottage. You were saying about Scalia's dissent, where he, in one case, spoke about how we can't really trust the legislature's work on the Voting Rights Act. On the other, he said we can trust them when it comes to discriminating against gay people, essentially.
Right, and he said it. Can you hear me okay from here?
Yep.
Great. He said it in such strong language that it was sort of laughable. I mean, his language was such that he said, you know, that we're acting like we are the supreme divine body, you know, giving our guidance over the legislature. So, you know, language like that when it came to the DOMA case. And, of course, voting rights, I mean, as broken down, I think it was Paul Campos over at Salon, the most absurd argument. Think about this argument in your life in general, the argument that the Supreme Court made, which was essentially, it's working too well, so let's stop it.
Right.
So for anybody who's on a diet and you've lost weight, start eating garbage again. It's worked too well. Why are you still doing it?
Right. You no longer need it. You no longer need to eat well. You've lost the weight.
Right. If you let's go further than that. If you had heart disease and you're eating well and you've improved, you should go back to what you were doing before.
Right.
You know, I mean, if you found yourself before driving in too much of a dangerous fashion because you were driving with your eyes closed and crashing into things, but when you started keeping your eyes open and then you didn't hit things anymore, you should go back to closing your eyes while you drive.
And
one could come up with 1,000 metaphors for how utterly stupid the reasoning was.
And even with, you know, even as wrong as the construction of the metaphor was, the fact is that they did not really look at the data. I mean, this is what's really stunning, is that in the Shelby case, they didn't even really look at the data in the actual case. They certainly did not do as a comprehensive of a fact-finding mission as the Senate and the House did back when they reauthorized the Voting Rights Act in the mid-2000s. This was an incredibly naked decision in terms of why they were going about this. And it, you know, within days of that, ruling, we see, some of the worst, of those laws, which were struck down by the DOJ and then the courts in the, through a Section 5, process, they're being reinstated, by those,
That's right.
those states. And, you know, the real question is, in some quarters, it's interesting the way that people are reacting to this in some quarters, in that, well, the backlash is going to be so strong that this may, in fact, doom the Republicans to becoming even more isolated and more of a sort of a geographic and narrow psychographic constituency. Because, you know, when you combine this with immigration, which now looks like it's going to fail in the House by hook or crook, the
crook when it comes to the Republican Party.
Indeed, the game plan seems to be, let's double down on racial polarization and see how far this is going to take us. I mean,
they can't help themselves. I mean, that's what's clear. Is look, it's, you know, there are people that know that they have to pander to this crowd. I mean, let me give you an example of someone who I used to have some respect for, who I now hold in utter disdain, which is the supposed, you know, reasonable Senator Rob Portman from my state here of Ohio, you know, who's a reasonable establishment Republican. He voted against immigration reform. He voted against background checks. You know, he came out for gay marriage when he realized his son was gay. He won't do anything to fight for it, but of course he did that. So apparently, too bad his son didn't immigrate over from Mexico.
Right.
Maybe he would be for it, because he realizes he doesn't. I don't believe he believes in most of the things he's been voting for a second. But he realizes he's already pissed off the crazy Tea Party faction with what he's done on gay marriage. So he's going to go to the far right on everything else to try to appease them when he runs for re-election. He's an example of one type of person. But this other faction of the party, the ones that talk about masturbating fetuses and women getting rape kits because it cleans them out and all of these other things, they just are regressive, stupid people. There's just no other way to put it. They're not educated. They are dumb. They're dumb, and they're in the last century. They don't represent what science or medical science or knowledge, combined knowledge, or where we're going as a people. And so this is the stuff that they believe, and there's legislative districts throughout the country where they've been able to make sure that they've gotten enough of them elected into power. And again, with the comments as well as the voting, the people that realize this are way outnumbered by the people that are just too dumb and too bigoted to care. So if you look at this week, if you look at them on their reaction to gay marriage, if you look at them on their reaction to immigration, and you look at them, as you said, their reaction to voting rights and their reaction again to what Wendy Davis did in Texas, all of the groups we've been talking about, from women overall, but specifically single women, married women at this point, a swing group, and others. If you look at Hispanic Americans, Asian Americans, African Americans, who are just growing in enormous numbers from a re-migration back to the South by African Americans, by certain states like Georgia and Texas, that will end up being swing states within the next 8 years or so, perhaps sooner. When you look at Hispanics who have turned already states like New Mexico and Colorado into Democratic states, at least in the case of Colorado and Florida, swing states, and New Mexico, one that was once a swing state, is now a firmly Democratic state. Arizona, we're looking at similar demographics. Nevada is a lean Democratic state now. They obviously can't help themselves. And they managed in this week to remind all these groups that the Democrats and progressives particularly don't do a good job of publicizing all this and reminding every one of these groups why, who these people are that hate them and loathe them, then that's their failure. I mean, they shouldn't have to, and they won't have to in many cases. But I think your point is right, Sam. I think there will be a backlash to this if this is handled correctly. And there should be, because this is clearly an assault on very specific groups of people.
Yeah, it's going to be, Portman's an interesting case, too, because, you know, one has to think that in Portman's mind, the gutting of Section 4 is, it could very well help him in the short term when it comes to elections in Ohio. This is one of those states where the racial polarization that's involved, and, you know, there's been a long history of suppressing African-American votes in Ohio, again, by hooking.
Well, they worked harder here because, you know, it's a swing state, much
yep.
like some of the other ones we discussed before, Pennsylvania. And so here, if you can suppress that vote, you know, it doesn't matter as much, let's say, in Alabama or, you know, the three African-Americans in Utah. But here, if you can pull that off. So you're right. It may help Portman in the short term. It's going to kill his party in the long term.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, and hope springs eternal. we're seeing the sort of in some respects the last gasp. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see if there is some fix to, and just to reiterate to folks, Section 5 is the section of the Voting Rights Act that speaks about the need for preclearance in about 12 or 15 states and then a bunch of counties around the country that must pre-clear their changes to voting rules based upon, and those states and counties are enumerated by a formula that is laid out in Section 4. They invalidated that formula, which essentially hollows out Section 5, because as of now,
right.
No one is subject to Section 5, or I should say...
Well, there's no formula, and they said they threw it back to Congress. They'd come up with a new formula, and of course, all of you know that right away, people like Steve Stockman and Louis Gohmert and Michelle Bachmann and Steve King and others will be working hard to enact a new formula so they can move forward with this.
And
the Congress is not going to do anything on it.
Right.
Obviously, they know that. I mean, Scalia again proved what gets me angry is when people have given this guy some sort of, because he likes to use $2 words in his dissent, his writing, and the rest, that he's not just the same sort of spoiled, angry child as he showed in that DOMA dissent that the rest of these Tea Party guys are. He just got there a little sooner than the Tea Party erupted in this country, but he is just an aggrieved, angry white male who will find any justification. He's a politician in a robe, which, you know, he's proven again and again and again, from Bush v. Gore, equal protection for George Bush, but I guess not now for anybody else, you know, to the decision on Citizens United gutting 100 years of campaign finance law, decision on guns gutting 80 years of law on firearms in this country, now a decision on voting rights gutting 50 to 60 years of law on that. If that's not an activist juror, judge, I don't know what is.
Right.
They're politicians and they're doing what they think they can get away with politically.
And
if anything, Sam, I'll just say quickly, what if anything should have been done with what this country's gone through in recent years with all the voter suppression, and I'd love to hear what someone like Ari Berman would say on this, is if the Supreme Court thought that they were biased against these 15 counties, well, then maybe every county should have to get pre-court.
That's exactly, actually.
I'd be just fine with that.
That's exactly what Ari has been saying. In fact, were you not on vacation, you would have known because you would have heard him on the program earlier in the week.
I feel bad. I missed it. Look at me.
No, but you're actually
Ari
right.
For a minute.
Look, the bottom line is the federal government has the authority over federal elections, and every state should be subject to pre-clearance, and we should have some type of national standards. Now, hopefully, we'll see increased efforts in terms of getting out the vote and a more targeted efforts like we saw in 2012. It remains to be seen. But let's move to the unmitigated, in many respects, I guess, mostly unmitigated, the decision in DOMA, where there's still...
By the way, can you hear the garbage truck here?
No, I can't. But that sounds...
I just want to make sure people are getting good background sound from here.
Well, that sounds like a wonderful vacation you're on. I'm not even going to ask. But the... in DOMA, I mean, you know, what is there to say other than, you know, it'd be nice to hear a case, you know, it's going to be time... Time is going to pass, in terms of issues like reciprocity or full faith and credit, sometimes people refer to in terms of whether or not one can be married in one state and then move to another. It's going to take a while to work out all the federal regulations and things like Social Security, which may actually have to go through Congress. But it's quite clear that that progress on this front, though long overdue, is moving with an incredible force. And again, I think, you know, I was saying this on the program, I think it's just a function of demographics. I mean, it is just a function of something changed in our culture so dramatically over the past 15, 20 years that for generations, younger generations, this is... So the idea that same-sex couples can't marry is so anachronistic that I think it's just I don't know. It must be like what?
Well, Sam, we're similar age, you and I,
yeah.
Right? And I think if we hadn't grown up seeing some of the crap that we'd seen, think if we'd grown up a little bit later, and you grew up and all you're experiencing is Ellen DeGeneres on TV and Will and Grace.
I really
and you're
think
being,
this
because
it.
Telling stories is always what's important, is being introduced to real people and seeing that they're just like you, whether it comes to the abortion argument, that knowing that 40% of women have had abortions and meeting them and seeing they're just like everybody else, meeting victims of gun violence, meeting people of different races, when it comes to voting and the rest, that always ends up changing opinions. And I think in a way, people like you and I, for the first part of our growing up, our experience in the 70s and, you know, late 70s, and in my case, which I can remember, in the 80s, you know, was a different time.
Yeah.
Where I saw, you know, AIDS became, there was an AIDS outbreak. There was a huge amount of anti-gay hysteria.
Yeah.
There were policemen wearing gloves when they touched gay people. There
yeah.
were all sorts of things to say, you are an other and you are different. And I just think that those who are, you know, the millennials and people since then have not had that experience that maybe Generation Xers like you and I. And I think overall, we're still pretty fairly in favor of gay marriage. as a group. But those that came after us just didn't see any of that crap to begin with. And culturally, it's just been a whole different thing.
I actually cited Will and Grace and Ellen. I think it was yesterday in talking about this. And I think you're absolutely spot on about this. You know, for our generation, it was an issue. It was an issue, I think, in the main, our generation fell on the right side. But for the generation that followed us, I don't even think it's an issue. I think it's just sort of something like they're looking around and saying, like, you know, it's as if, like, all of a sudden a city decided to start building all these payphones. I think people would just be like, what, why?
And I think it's a perfect metaphor. Yeah, and again, I'm not insulting our generation. I think we got it right, and numbers show overall that Generation X probably was the first one that started moving in that direction. You know, in that way, after the earlier experiences of seeing discrimination, most of us got with the program, so to speak. But I think, millennials never even saw any of that. They never had to deal with the Anita Bryants in the way of having the power that she had. You know, and some of these figures who speak out, you know, in such anti-gay terms are just caricatures to them.
Yeah, and, you know, it's fascinating, you know, because I really do think, I mean, I have not seen the sort of and maybe there's a book out there, but I have yet to see someone sort of our generation was just sort of very weirdly placed in a lot of issues like that. It was a, you know, sort of a wretched time. When I look back on it from a political standpoint of, like, you know, people wanting to be PJ O'Rourke and just a really nasty time where I think the sort of
Peter O'Rourke is part of this cool kind of countercultural conservatism.
Where
they were the insurgents. That was the cool thing to be.
Exactly, and this sort of like we are, you know, so cool in counterculture that we're going to be a-holes and, wave that flag proudly. And our generation was at the fulcrum of it. Growing up, and you know, granted, I was growing up in Worcester, which is not exactly a particularly cosmopolitan city. It's not.
Come on, the nice restaurants.
The nice
cool shops.
I think there is there may have been a nice restaurant. But I was so oblivious to the sort of the existence of gay people. Surely I must have known some people who were gay in high school, but it was just not. It was still like shrouded in mystery, and, like, you know, the only movies that you would see were like Cruising, where there was this sort of
right.
Or cartoonish, sort of, you know, in terms of like, what I can't even remember the name of that band now. They sang YMCA.
The Village People.
The Village, yeah, the Village People, which was sort of this, like, so, this is seeped up from the counterculture, and I don't know.
I remember my experience in high school and college, and the way I would look at it, you know, when I was at places that sort of were filled with people that were mostly socially liberal, you know, and yet still it was that there was a tolerance and an acceptance, but it was very different.
Yes, absolutely.
We're tolerant and acceptant, and we accept their differences, but I was taught that people that were gay were different, you know, and I don't think that lesson was ever, you know, taught. He wasn't taught you need to be tolerant or accepting, you know, accepting that they're gay and they're different. It was that they're no different than you.
Right.
It seems generation has done.
It's been a fascinating period in terms of what and showing what the difference of culture makes. And so let's talk about what happened in the Texas state legislature, because when you think about how, even at the time, how controversial it was, let's say, when Dan Quayle was talking about Murphy Brown, you know, some now, I mean, honestly, this is like, I guess this is 20.
I remember it was going into 92.
Yeah, 20 years ago, I guess. And
I was a college Democrat.
The virulence, the misogyny, the sort of the backwardness it has not in any way dissipated, at least maybe in terms of numbers it has, in terms of those people, but the belief structure of these people. I mean, I don't know if you caught Rick Perry's talk that he gave yesterday at some, I can't remember what.
Yes. When she eventually got through Harvard, as if Rick Perry, you know, if you gave him a cerebral graft, 800-point head start in his SATs, and, oh, I don't know, what's the third thing? That he'd be able to get into Harvard Law. And yet he's this woman who grew up in a trailer park and was a teenage mom herself and was a daughter of a teenage mom and got herself into Harvard Law and accomplished what she accomplished. That he's talking about her in a demeaning. I think you're exactly right. Rick Perry was a rural, conservative white guy from Texas, to these guys, that's kind of my point. I don't think they can help themselves because I just don't think they're separate from the rest of us. They go, they attend their own churches, they attend their own, pig fries or whatever the hell it is. And I just don't think they, to them, speaking about fetal masturbation and things like this, this is apparently when they come out and they say these things, this is what they talk about when they're in crowds together. They discuss whether rape creates pregnancy or not. That's an actual topic of debate.
Perry also was talking about how, when they're screaming, that's when we're doing, I don't know exactly how he put it. It was pretty offensive, but I'll tell you what was fascinating about, and there's been some people who've written pretty interesting stuff on this. Amanda Marcotte comes to mind. But the calculus of, what if she had been aborted? That was his whole context for, Wendy Davis, of a single mom, and she was a single mom. And what if she had, been aborted? That calculus is sort of a fascinating calculus, because you could also flip it. And ask Rick Perry if there aren't people, aside from the idea of like, would America be a better place if Rick Perry was not born? I mean, I'm not being flip here. I mean, this is, if you're going to use this logical framework of someone who you're looking at their life at age 50 and looking back and saying, what if we had never gotten the contribution of this person because they had been aborted? Well, then must
Texas
also
certainly couldn't. I don't think he's had much contribution nationally, except for us laughing a lot.
I mean, you need to flip this, because there are also people who, he has sat upon and authorized the killing of several hundred people, whom he must have
he's
thought.
He's correct, by the way. I think it's 261 or something like that now.
261.
He is a champ.
Presumably. If these people, ostensibly, if we, we don't know for sure, because we can never have that level of sureness, but in Rick Perry's mind, these people killed someone and they deserve to die. Well, perhaps they never deserve to be alive. I mean, if,
right. that secret passage that's not often quoted that Jesus said.
I'm not.
He said, turn the other cheek, but then pull the electric lever.
Indeed.
And it's not often quoted, but it's out there if you look and you find it. So he is just following the will of Jesus by killing 261 people.
Well, I mean, aside from that, my point is, though, is that if you're going to retroactively look at a person's life and say, if they had never been born, we would have lost the contributions of this person. Surely you could also say the opposite, that there are people have lived in the history of the world, that had they never been born, we would have been better off. And,
but you know what? I don't even accept their formulation. And that's the thing. They do that to try to push you into the place of that you're aborting actual people. And my response to that is, well, we don't know. The whole point is that I don't believe it's a person. And so my belief is that Wendy Davis would, she would be somewhere else. She'd be someone else. I don't accept their formulation that a person was aborted, because I don't believe it's a person yet. It's a fetus, and there's a difference.
Yes. And, certainly in terms of our Constitution and other mechanisms, but leaving that aside for a moment, let's talk about the implications of what what happened in that session, because it was stunning. I was up all night watching this thing, and
it was like an Aaron Sorkin episode, wasn't it?
It was, and I'll tell you something. You know, when we have a very rough barometer of what type of events that take place in the news, at least on this program, what type of events that take place are really galvanizing people. And I can see it in the downloads when we see a spike in how many podcast downloads we're getting. I can see it in what YouTube videos will pop online because we watch those metrics. And, you know, of all the things that took place this week, there was a tremendous amount of interest. And I would say in many quarters, that got the least coverage of any of the stories that took place this week. And I think the impact of the attacks on women, when we saw it in the 2012 election, but I think this is not over. I think this is growing, and I think the level of intensity, and you know,
it's going to. I couldn't agree with you more. I think it was a sleeping tiger waiting for a galvanizing event. You know, I work. You know, we talked about the gun issue on this show. I spent a lot of time working on abortion rights too. And you know, I've been seeing, I've been seeing a similar pattern kind of over the last sort of 6 months or a year, which were these constant assaults on people by bullies, pushing, you know, attacking. It's the same people who show up in comment sections on blogs and places and attack you in sort of a vicious way and try to suppress any dissent. And it was, you know, and sadly the galvanizing event on guns was Newtown, you know, sadly it was that. But on this, it sort of, it was what was going to be the event that was going to make that, you know, and I'll, to use a fun phrase, that silent majority stand up and just sort of say enough, you know, and this ended up being that, in an amazing way. I was watching it that night too. And it just was something where, you know, I could feel it in the community from you know, women I'm friends with who were very involved in this movement and just seeing, you know, women I'm friends with and really, frankly, men, too, who care passionately about it, who, you know, kind of were you know, waiting to say enough being on defense, enough watching North Dakota and Arkansas, you know, and all these states pass one more draconian law after another. And the reminder, you know, just again, that I started off this show with, that one person, you know, we saw it with Russ Feingold at times in the Senate and Paul Wellstone. We've seen it with Elizabeth Warren speaking out on banking issues more recently. One person can make a difference. They really can when they have that kind of a platform and a microphone and the theatrics and the drama of the willingness to stand up to this kind of power. And it just, everything came together because she also happens to be a terrific speaker. She did everything right. They tried to steal one of their phrases, shut that whole thing down, by using a ridiculous, claiming that she was speaking about things that were non-germane. You're not allowed to do that. Three times, apparently, speaking about things that are non-germane to the debate. She's speaking about sonograms, which, from what I remember, are pretty well related to abortion when you're passing bills that make women have sonograms that are unnecessary. And so it was the manner in which it was done. Everything just came together. It was one of those moments where something was ready to go viral, and it did in an amazing way.
You know, the other thing that I think, the other dynamic that's at play here is that the issue of abortion rights has metastasized both on the right, and I think it's always been that on the right, insofar as that it's really about women's role in society, as opposed to just...
Let me say quickly, I don't want to cut you off, but just, of course, you know, for the people who say, no, it's not, there may be some percentage of people where, you know, it's a child's life and this and that who are consistent. But when Rick Perry refuses to take Medicaid funding under Obamacare, extra Medicaid funds, then how can you believe that it's anything else? It's impossible to believe it. Because when the same group of people who scream and yell and claim that it's the fetus they care about are actually rejecting funds and health care for live children, and allowing them, let's be quite frank here, to die.
Yeah.
Allowing them to be impoverished, allowing them to die because they don't have access to health care, then it's quite obvious not allowing women to have access to birth control, which would prevent many of the prevent abortion in many cases. Well, then it's quite obvious what it's about, isn't it? I mean, it couldn't be more obvious.
And I think obviously the rape talk and but when Letitia Van Depute, she was the other Texas legislator, when she stood up and during this parliamentary fight, and her motion was ignored, and when she said, you know, what does how loud does a woman have to be for you to recognize her making a motion as opposed to my male colleagues? That is what I'm talking about. Is that I think for what has happened over the past 2 or 3 years is that the issue of abortion rights are now seen to be part of a larger fabric. And I think this has always been the case by people who have been advocates in this, but I think the broader population and on both sides of this issue are now seeing these, and it's more, I think, obvious to those who are not so politically aware and involved, that these issues are larger than just whether or not a woman has a right to an abortion. It has to do
That's
with the
exactly
rights
right.
of women and their role in society. And I think that is what has been the sort of fundamental change over the past couple of years, is that there is an awareness that this is part of a larger story about the way that those foes of abortion rights perceive women and vice versa. I think, you know, there are.
And they say it, right? I mean, you know, we hear it from the likes of the moronic Eric Erickson and company about men can do things and women can't. We heard it from Phil Gingrey, one of the lunatics who's running for the nomination for the Georgia Senate open Senate seat, who's a congressman who said that we should be teaching different gender roles at early ages and mm-hmm. telling women you can do this and or telling girls you can do this and boys you can do that. I mean, you know, again, they can't keep their mouths shut because what they talk about amongst themselves, they don't realize that most of the rest of us out there who still have all of our teeth disagree with. And there's your problem for them.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, now that this veneer is ripped off, I mean, I really do think that we are seeing a new wave of feminism. I don't think it self-IDs as that way, but I think that's what we're seeing, is that, I mean, I do think that there is a broader awareness that this issue is tied into women's economic rights and, I mean, just broader issues that have to do with roles in society. And on some level, it's a function of the right being more naked about it, in that they are, you know, perfectly willing to take the next step and say, you know, and Amanda Marcotte, I think, in her piece touched on this too. This is why they see this, you know, the whole notion of this, circling back to that logic of Rick Perry's statement about what if Wendy Davis had been aborted, essentially. That's why they see, if you carry that out to its logical conclusion, anything
yeah,
that
you know what a great go ahead, sorry.
Well, anything that prevents pregnancy and anything that prevents the birth of a child, including contraception, is problematic because you're preventing life from being created and from ultimately being born. And that's why they can get to the place where they say, you know, God's given a gift when a rape takes place. And, you know,
right.
I mean, this is the logical extension of what they're saying here, is that.
No, that's right.
If we talk about the 30 billion people who would be here in society were it not for abortion, well, then you could also talk about the umpteenth billion people who would not be here were it not for contraception. And then you can even take it a step further. If it weren't for laws that prevent rape, we would have even more and more people that would be around, because we should have, and in fact, if we didn't,
talk about the people that would be here if we hadn't used yellow cake and curveball to go to war in Iraq.
Well, we don't hear them go that far, because once people are born, then they can be judged by man.
They're on their own, independence, yes. Because then it's all about freedom.
Right. I mean, so, But leaving that aside, again, you know, I think it's fascinating what's happening. It's going to have electoral implications, but I think more importantly, we're going to see broader societal changes that that are going to be even far more important.
Well, and let me say quick. I know we're probably going to have to go soon, but let me say, you know, you brought up Amanda Marcotte's piece, a great companion piece. If you want to read something else, is to go over to RH Reality Check. Some of you are probably familiar with writer, activist Natasha Chart, uh-huh. Her husband Chris Bowers, who's at Daily Coast, and they just had a baby who's had to go back into the NICU a couple of times. And she wrote a great piece about the forced birth crowd and sort of broke down. You know, she chose to be a mother and everything, but she sort of pointed out along the way what the different costs are and what it would be like for a woman who didn't have insurance. You know, $1,000 a day in the NICU, you know, when they had to have special care done because she had to have her baby 6 weeks early, that would have cost $24,000 for the procedure, another $4,500 for the attending physician, another $9,000 for the anesthesiologist with the epidural. And yet these are people that claim they care about life, are forcing women to have birth, but don't want to provide the health care. What happens to women who, you know, I mean, we're talking now about the median yearly salary for an adult in this country.
Right.
What are the numbers I just added up, you know, and so I really would implore people to go and read that piece because it's brilliantly constructed. She also works in people she talked to along the way when she got in the cab of the hospital, a cab driver who saw that his wife who had two kids, and because they couldn't afford insurance, there wasn't a doctor there, and one of the children was born with the umbilical cord twins around his or her neck and now has brain damage because of it. Because they could, I mean, it's a piece that makes the case, the case that I think goes along with the one you're pointing out about with Amanda Marcotte in every way.
Yeah.
That what this crowd wants when they're telling you have to have kids, what that means for a lot of people who don't have jobs they can just go back to or own their own business or do their own radio show or whatever, but will get fired, who are day-to-day laborers, and just all the implications of what these people want to do. I would call it a must-read.
We will we'll link to that at majority.fm if we have not already. Well, Cliff, I want to let you go simply. We could continue to talk about this week literally for hours, I think. And
but then my wife might actually get pissed and sort of beat the crap out of me.
Yes, and you know? Unless we had actual video of that to post. Unless we had video of that, we would not want that to happen. So
I would send the video if it would help spike up donations. I will do that.
Oh, maybe we could actually.
That's how far my love goes.
We'll put that on the list of fundraising ideas. Watch Cliff Schechter take a beating.
Or you can see one of my little boys accidentally kick me in a place that men don't like to be kicked.
Yes.
Because that happens at least 3-4 times a day, Sam.
So. I'm looking forward to that when my son gets older. Well, Cliff, have a continued great vacation. We're going to be doing a pre-record next Friday from some of the stuff that we did at Netroots Nation for July 4th. So have a great July 4th, and we will talk to you in a couple of weeks.
You too, buddy, and thanks again, guys, and everyone for listening.
All right.
Take care.
Thanks, Cliff. Very good of Cliff to join us. Now, we've got Jimmy Reefer Cake song.
Yeah, we do, but someone sent us. Oh my God, it's great, Michael.
What is it?
Brilliant.
Wait, hold on. Go ahead. But what is it?
It's a visual on the Louis Gohmert
with a
series.
great name for the series. I don't even think we came up with that.
This is pretty stunning work here.
God.
It's amazing.
This is from Don Quixote, who has been creating amazing artwork. I mean, aside from the artwork that he is created for years on the old Majority Report radio.com site. He would post it. He did a wonderful, my favorite artwork, I think, of that I've ever seen was a picture of myself and Catherine Harris to celebrate that. And if he has that, send it to us. But we'll, let's post this on the site. He is entitled the Go-American.
It's just brilliant.
It is.
I actually had to restrain myself when I first saw that to not disrupt the show.
We made a call yesterday for animation of our hopefully soon to be created series of Louis Gohmert as a secret Soviet spy.
We didn't even think of titles. This is just too. How do you outdo this?
It's perfect. And this, the, you know, what will work with this is I don't know what they call that, but we're just the
mouth moves.
Just the
animation.
Mouth moves.
Yes.
And so we would just need a couple of these things. And so Don Quixote, and you can check him out. Let's link to Don Quixote's Flickr, where you can see his artwork. I don't know how he does it. He sort of mutates pictures. I don't know, but it's great stuff. But let's play the Jimmy Reefer Cake song, and then we will head into the better half of the program, and we will leave you on the edge of your seats as to whether or not we will get movie recommendations from Matt and Michael. My guess is, well, I want to create the suspense, so we won't tell you. But let's see what we got. What do we have now? It is a couple weeks old. I missed it at Netroots
Station. Just 1 week old.
1 week old from Jimmy Reefer Cake. As you know, Jimmy Reefer Cake, our resident, what would you call him, composer-in-chief of the program at different times over the years. We've had
our,
people who have...
Our token composer-in-chief.
Why do you say that?
I don't know.
What do you mean? He's the only one.
Oh, not really.
No, just, I mean, we've had other people over the years.
I'm making a pun here.
Oh, I see. Okay. You'll all remember the Screaming Majority. Those guys used to make weekly songs for us, but it's a tough road to hoe. Or, I'm sorry, row to hoe. Tough road to...
Just,
tough road to back hoe.
That just shows you're... how great Jimmy Reefer Cake's been, consistent with that. He's taken us up to Maine today with Paul LePage, You're a Hypocrite.
LePage,
my bad.
In a little context, I don't know if people remember, I think when this song was supposed to be played was right around the time that LePage had made a comment about someone in another politician didn't like wanting to give it to the electorate without Vaseline.
That's right.
So those references will probably be all over the song. Yes. I just want to give a little context.
All right, here we go.
You'd think saying the comment about the Vaseline and the butt sex would be enough, but he goes on to insult his fellow Republican legislators, he's calling them his governor. Kids. I think he also said that the Democratic legislator Jackson had a black heart and should had no brains and should go back to chopping lumber, go back to the woods. Okay.
The governor of Maine is just plain shameful. Listen to what he says. What a friggin' ass. Oh, I'm trying to avoid the explicit rating, but my God, this man just keeps on hating. The people of Maine have had enough of it. Paul LePage, you're a goddamn hypocrite. Hypocrite, yeah, yeah. It's the same old crap.
Wow.
I really like that one. The only thing, Jimmy,
I don't know if the game is
pretty thoroughly and consistently, you know, like, insane.
Michael, your capacity to understand abstract, this is art. This is not so, don't take it so literally.
Excuse me, I'm bringing my utilitarian mind to bear.
Yes, you've got
it.
Exactly.
I love that song.
You got to let your left side of your brain do a little thinking, buddy.
There's no art.
It does.
Class at
it
home
does.
School.
It yeah, does lots not. Of thinking when it's handling cutting the show and.
Well, that's your right side of the brain, I think. No,
I don't know. All right, folks, we're going to head into the better half of the program. You can not only can you support this program and make sure that it continues on a daily basis, but you can also receive another sometimes 50 minutes, sometimes an hour, sometimes in this instance 30, 35 minutes extra daily content as a bonus by becoming a member today at majority.fm. Support the work that we do. If the program's important to you, you want it to continue, please support us if you can afford to do it, of course. If you can't, feel free to email us at majorityreporters@gmail.com. Sometimes we're a little late in responding to emails, but we always endeavor to get there eventually, and we'll set you up and make sure that you're not denied because of financial reasons. You can also support this show if you buy your crap through Amazon. Buy it through our Amazon link. You will know no difference. It will cost you nothing. But literally 2.5 minutes of your time, go to majority.fm, scroll down to the bottom of the page, see the Amazon link, click it, bookmark it. Always buy your Amazon junk through that link. We get a kickback. Also, if you drink coffee, there's absolutely every reason in the world for you to be drinking Just Coffee from justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, chocolate. It is a co-op. It's employee-owned. You get a coupon code. Majority give you a 10% discount. Buy the majority.fm blend. You'll love it. See you in the better half of the program.